listening to Wake Up Hollywood with Nikki Kalula and Eddie Pence, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Hollywood, this is your host with the most, Nikki Kalula. We're going to jump right into this episode. We have a very special guest, an exceptionally talented artist, Mr. Aaron Grooves. How are you, Aaron?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm good, man. I know you were just teaching and you've been just rushing all over town and you still look sharp, so all is well. How are you? Tell me what you're working on as of late. Are you writing? Are you recording? Are you just kind of like practicing? Tell me what you're working on right this moment.
Yes to all of the above. I just finished up the school year last Thursday. I teach at a school kindergarten through sixth grade. And in addition to touring and composing and traveling and all that stuff. And I love it. I've tried to slip away from teaching regularly because, you know, just create more space to do more more other types of art, especially more time for touring and more time for composing and finishing personal projects. But teaching is so rewarding. I know you teach as well.
Yes.
And I still do some private teaching as well. So I just finished up with a couple of students. And these days, honestly, like I'm really excited about this summer because my plan is to really focus on a lot of these projects that I've been kind of slowly putting off and just being too busy to really focus the time and energy on. So I've been practicing a lot of marimba. I jumped back into my marimba practice as soon as school got out. I practiced twice in the last couple of days. I've been practicing drum set again, been finishing some piano compositions. Wow. I just put out a lot of sheet music from possibly from some of the stuff you're going to share tonight. Okay, I put out some sheet music to finish up and share with my YouTube fans. And it's all good stuff.
Well, you know, it's funny. The reason I asked, it's so hard to compartmentalize when to practice, how to practice, when to work, when to teach, when to produce, when to, you know, just do the artist lifestyle. So I always love asking that question because I think every artist is always stirring multiple pots, whether it's day gig versus like, okay, creative, you know, finances versus creative prowess versus, you know, we all love to practice just to work on the thing to get better at it. It's like, you know, so it's like always like weird to find time and carve out these spaces to work on the thing or to like get that different hat on where it's like, okay, now I'm creating. Now I'm performing. Okay, now I'm teaching the gift. Now I'm kind of like trying to just build on what I'm already building on. And it's like, I always love this question because it's really hard, you know, like to juggle everything. So I wanted to ask you, what do you find first, before we go into your backstory, what do you find the hardest about juggling everything and trying to carve out the right time for certain hats that you have to wear?
That's such a good question. For me, I think, honestly, it's just prioritizing.
Right.
Because, you know, we artists, we do what we do because we love it. It's yes. not, it's more than just income for us.
Yes.
So many things that we do are passions. And how do you manage all of these different passions? So like I'm saying, I really genuinely love teaching and I always plan to teach and perform and compose as much as I can. I was just on the phone with my buddy who I perform with in Collision of Rhythm, our duo show. We're talking about like, how much do we really want to pursue more tours for the next coming season? We got invited to do this showcase, a Druid Spot at the showcase coming up in the fall. And it's like, do we really want to do this Druid showcase? Because if we do, we could be saying yes to doing more small tours. But do we want that right now? Because he's working on his own stuff in Atlanta. I'm working on my own stuff in LA. We both love everything that we do. Right. And then with the teaching thing, with the school thing, with my marimba plans and my marimba solo stuff and mixing that with the jazz and those kinds of plans that I have. And then there's also just the fun sheet music stuff. And then there's music theory stuff. And there's just so many fun things. So for me, it's always about prioritizing. And I think lately what's helped me is I've been really taking a step back and thinking like, how much joy does everything bring me? whether it's teaching at the school or it's the private lessons. And then in addition to how much joy does it bring me, like how much joy does it bring the people that I'm trying to help? Like, right. Am I really able to help the people the way I want to help them? Because, you know, if we spread ourselves too thin, people aren't going to get the full essence of who we are. Yep. So I've been really feeling that this year, especially the spring semester was just really challenging. There was just so much happening in the school where I teach and in my personal life. And there are some things I wanted to do with my students that, I mean, we still did a bunch of amazing stuff. I'm very proud of this year. But there are some things that I wish I had a little more time and energy to just really put into them. Or maybe I was on tour for a week when I really wish I could have been working on this thing. But then the flip side of that is also true, because like I would love to just leave school and do more touring. And well, I left the school at one point, but then ended up coming back. So it's all about finding the right priority.
It's a fine balance, because I also juggle with, oh, do I want to be on the road? Oh, do I want to be producing? Oh, do I want to be performing in town? Oh, do I want to be teaching? Oh, do I want to be just working on records? Because I love working on my own records. Like, there's a process where you have to find, okay, this is what I want to finish or work on. Yep. And then there's another time where it's like, once that thing is finished, okay, it's about rolling it out. It's about promoting it. It's about performing it. It's about, okay, this is, you know, like I realize now, 20 years into my career, every album has been like its own hat and shirt that I'm like, okay, I've got to wear this on my head, on my heart, and go out and be the billboard for this thing that I truly believe in. And then it has a finite amount of time. And then you're like, okay, on to the next thing. It could be a year, 2 years from now, 3 years from now, whatever it is. And it's like, you're constantly pushing the wheel forward, whatever that is, to kind of like build a part of your career that, you know, you may be lacking, or you may want to like advertise, you know, that you're working on things. So, you know, it's like for me right now, everything has been focused on this YouTube channel, because I've not put any time into YouTube. And I love that you put so much time into YouTube. Tell me what made you first focus on your YouTube channel. You've got 300,000 plus subscribers, which is amazing. I'm just crossing the threshold of 7,000.
Hey.
But I mean, it's like, you know, we started from zero, and I just like, it's so commendable that you have 300,000 plus. Tell me, when was that point where you're like, I need to focus on this for a while? And it's funny, because when we were talking on the phone, you were like, yeah, I'm putting a little bit less time into YouTube. Tell me like why those things shifted, because I'm curious about just all the things about YouTube right now, because I'm trying to build that part of my career.
Right. The YouTube thing is such an interesting beast, because there's so many ways into it.
Right.
You know, and then my way in, I think it's kind of unique, and it's a little rare, because it's harder to happen these days. Because my way in was, this was back in the mid-2000s when YouTube wasn't even owned by Google yet, I don't think.
Right.
And I just wanted to share some cool stuff. I was like, oh, this is a really cool thing I like. Let me just put it together and show other people. And hopefully I can get some feedback. And it was back at the time where they still had a 5-star rating system instead of the thumbs up and thumbs down. Okay. You could read all the comments. You could download all the comments. You could see everything on one page. So things were just a lot different. It was more like a community sharing platform.
Right.
So back then, it was really just because I wanted to put some fun projects that I was working on to show people and get feedback. And also, I genuinely believe that part of my bio or my mission statement was like spreading joy. Because, we really need that.
Yes. No, and especially right now. I mean, you know,
oh my goodness,
you're in L.A., I'm in L.A., and we're seeing what's happening in this wonderful city, and it's like despicable. It's just
that's a whole nother conversation.
But this is honestly, you know, I've been thinking about this a lot. I got chills right now just because I think I'm about to talk about the thing that is the most important about artists. Uh-huh. It's like, these are the times that we have to create the most.
Exactly.
And it's like, it's so hard, because it's like, okay, this is like a social dilemma, and we're not going to necessarily put ourselves on the front lines, but we're going to be a voice. We're going to be a voice for a generation and for a movement, and be the soundtrack. And like, that's so important to us, because that's how we reach people. And that's how we connect, you know, with listeners and understand, like, you know, maybe changing perspectives, or, you know, we kind of dig into the compassion of what's going on, and try to be healers too. It's like all these things that we're all feeling, but this is probably the most important time for all of us to kind of think about creations and creating. And, you know, so tell me a little bit about that, how that kind of influences your art, what's going on around you in the world? Like, what are the things you draw from?
Absolutely. Well, I know one of the clips on my YouTube channel that we talked about kind of relates to this too, because I did this Happy Birthday to Martin Luther King tribute, the Stevie Wonder song. And that, for me, that was one of my most personal projects. And there's another video on my YouTube channel called Black and Blue. And that was a song that I heard of through this really phenomenal tap dancer who wanted to use that in a tap dance show out here in Orange County.
Very cool.
And I listened to this song. Louis Armstrong has a version of it. I think Fats Waller maybe wrote the song. And there's all these amazing versions of it. And this was back around 2020 when I discovered this song. And I was listening to this song, maybe 2019, 2018. This was after Black Lives Matter came around the first time and were kind of rejected. And then in 2020, after George Floyd, it came back and had this kind of revival. Then everyone finally like, okay, now we're going to get on board with Black Lives Matter.
Right.
And that video, I put so much time and energy into, because I have the four Aarons. I have one on piano, one on this little uke bass, one on drums, and one singing.
Yeah.
And I kind of remade the song and remixed it, changed the chords, and put my own verse, my own spin on the verses. But I use so much of my YouTube channel really just to kind of put my own kind of effort to change the world out there. You know, and I have a lot more songs. You've heard a couple of my songs too, just in some of our songwriting.
Yeah, absolutely.
Opportunities to play them and share together.
You're amazing, Kat. I've been really excited to interview you. As you know, I've been texting you almost every week. Like, hey, you know? It's like, you know, like artists always fascinate me. And it's like, I knew, you know, I met you at a birthday party for Andrew Goldenhirsch, who's a very talented magician.
Shout out to Andrew.
Also, yeah, shout out to Andrew, who also loves marimba and plays. And, you know, and like when you walked in, I was like, I know that guy's an artist. I just knew right away. I'm like, this guy's a beast. I know he can take it. Well, it's just like, you know, it's the way an artist carries themselves. It's like all those things. So, you know, but like, you know, those things are so important to be the social voice.
Yeah.
And I love that, you know, we're going to play the Martin Luther King song. We'll start with that one first, but tell me like what went into it. Tell me why it was so tender and special for you. I know the significance of it. Martin Luther King wanted, Stevie Wonder wanted Martin Luther King, his birthday, to be a national holiday. And he wrote this song for that, you know, that movement, and which is such a powerful thing that, you know, he made that happen. And it's such an important part of American history that people don't know that Stevie Wonder was behind, you know? So tell me why that song resonated with you and why this video is so special.
Yeah. And actually, let me just take a quick step back. I think I totally skipped over one of your other questions just about YouTube.
That's all right.
Yeah. YouTube and all that. But to make that long story short, this is exactly why I started my YouTube channel, just to be able to share this kind of stuff. And, you know, as artists, we're, like you said, we're putting our voices into our art.
Yes.
And we're trying to communicate a message to our audiences. So I think, and we're going to talk about this a little later too, but so maybe I'll save it for then, because I know there's a couple other videos that we talked about. But my YouTube channel, the goal for me was just to have fun. And I had a couple of rules for myself. So my first big rule for YouTube was do things that I'm happy with.
Yes.
So I'm trying to put things out that I'm impressed by, that I would watch and be like, oh, wow, okay, I'm happy with this.
Yes.
But for me personally, it was never about just trying to get content out on a schedule.
No, that's an empty promise. That's an empty promise.
It's tough to do that,
And I don't care.
I've tried it before, and it's hard.
Yes.
But I definitely came out and like, well, if I can keep a schedule, that's great. But it's more important that I'm really proud of the stuff I'm putting out.
Yes.
And I've noticed that on your YouTube channel, too, like all the content you put out is super high quality.
I'm trying, and I'm also trying, like, it's like what you said, you know, for me, it's, I have to love what we're doing. Mm-hmm. Even if it's a cover song, I want to make sure that we do some justice to it, make it different, make it cool. It's a song I love to sing, or I love to play, or I love that I learned it for this, or a special guest that's part of it is making it special. Like, we did Baby I'm a Star. I don't think I'll ever be able to cover Baby I'm a Star better than when we did it with Dr. Fink in the room the Prince did. And it was all these things that just made it wonderful. And we just happened to have a camera crew there. So it's like one of those things where it's like, everything has to be what I love. And if I don't love it, I'm not doing it. I don't care about how many likes or how many views. I just don't care about that. It's not enough for me to like make and invest and take the time and dedicate energy to something that I don't care about. So it's like everything there is like, there are things that I care about that I'm excited about, inspired by. And I love that you said that, because that's great guidance for me to just keep doing those things. So I love that.
And you never know what's going to take off, like what's going to catch. Sometimes you put so much time and energy into this plan. You're like, this is going to be the most amazing thing I've ever done. And then for some reason, it just hardly gets any views. And then like that Mario video, for example, like I put that out and maybe a year or two later, I just noticed that it got a bunch of views in one day. Then it got a bunch more. Then it got a bunch more. And I was like, wait, it got like 70 million or 70,000 views in one day. And I was like, what's going on?
That's crazy.
And, and that was when I monetized my YouTube channel. Before then, it was just me just having fun. And then I was like, okay, I guess I should monetize it and become part of the YouTube partner program. Because that video qualified me to meet those thresholds.
That's amazing. That's amazing. That's what it takes, though. It takes that one video that it's like everybody's like, oh, this is great. And it's weird because it's like you can't really chase that. Like, you know, look, we haven't gotten there with any of those videos that we're doing. But one of my bass players, he was like, man, you're doing it the right way. It's a slow burn. You're just doing all the things that like, oh, this is just going to keep going. And that's what you have to kind of like make it. Cause it's like, it's also hard. I'm sure you feel like this. Once you did that big video with the Super Mario Brothers, how do you follow that? Like, what's the next thing that you're going to do that's going to captivate like that? You know, it's like, it's the rise, you know? So like, how did you kind of counter, okay, I need to switch lanes and here's the next thing. You know, what was the next video after that?
Yeah, exactly what you're saying. Also, there's going to be the pressure from your audience, because they're going to see the thing that they saw that kind of was your viral thing or the thing that they got introduced to your channel on. They want to see you do more and more of that.
Right.
So that's why having those personal kind of rules and expectations and boundaries for yourself on your YouTube, that's how it's helped me a lot, because there's been a lot of people that come around. Oh, we want to see more video game music on marimba. I'm like, oh, I have so much video game music on marimba that I've practiced and worked up, just haven't made the video for it, because that also takes time, as you know.
Yes, of course.
But I have like all this Zelda music. I have this Double Dragon. Double Dragon has the sickest soundtrack. The original Double Dragon on Nintendo.
I love
it. It's crazy. It's so good.
That's awesome.
All this stuff. But yeah, for me, it was pretty easy because I went into it with just wanting to share.
Right.
So it was easy for me to just kind of stay in that lane of just wanting to share. And then any of the income that came up from YouTube, because I do have some passive income from YouTube.
Right.
But fortunately for me, since it hasn't been the focus, it hasn't been something I've relied upon that I've needed.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
And maybe I've thought about this a lot too, like focusing more on that and making that more of my income intentionally, which I could do.
Yes. So I have friends that have 3 to 4 million subscribers.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
They have to post every day. It's like, once it gets to that level, it's like, okay, now you're anchored, but this is your thing and you need to post every day. And it's like, it's almost like, is that what I want? I don't know.
One other thing too. That reminds me of something else you said, made me think of this idea that some of the content that I've seen, because I haven't watched all your videos, but I've watched quite a few of them. And the content that you're producing is like, it's not something that, oh, I watched this today and then it's done. You're producing the type of content that people can come back to in 5 years and be like,
that's what I'm hoping. That's what I'm hoping.
Video is sick.
And it's also, I'm doing the same thing. I'm going back to video one and going, oh, this is so cool. It's still cool for me to watch it. If it's cool for me to watch it, then it's going to be cool for other people to watch, because I'm so close to it. And it's like, the hard thing is, and I know you know this, it's like picking the take that you're going to use. And it's like, and I know you, because you're such a super talented guy, that I know you've got like 5 takes, 4 takes that are all badass. And you have
36 takes on some things. That's crazy.
But I mean, how do you choose that? And here's another good question. How do you choose the take that is the one that you put on YouTube?
Right. Sometimes that can be fun. Like this Donkey Kong Country aquatic ambience music that I did. I like set up this loop with boom whackers and an electric bass and then shed over it on piano. And I had 2 takes I couldn't decide between. So I posted both of them on my YouTube community channel.
Wow.
Like, okay, which one do you guys think, which piano improvised solo do you think should be the one I released to make public? And then maybe only 40 or 50 people even watched them and commented.
Wow.
But that was enough just to, you know, get a little feedback.
Right.
And the one that I ended up choosing, like, I'm really happy with the one I chose. I actually just watched the outtake literally about a month ago. I was like, oh man, I'm so glad I chose that other one. So that can be a fun process.
That's interesting. It's also like, it's cool that are both up? Are both still up?
Yeah. Only one is public, but both can still be found. Yeah.
Well, so like that's the other thing too. It's like as an artist, like I'm at this point as an artist, like, man, I don't want to filter. I just don't want to censor anything. It's like, I don't care. Leave it, like leave all that stuff up. I almost could get to the point I could see of going back and just releasing outtakes of songs.
Yeah.
And just like, okay, like I've got this footage. I've got these takes that are just sitting there doing nothing. maybe there's a time where I just release all of these instead of like, here's the through line of everything. You know, these are all the things that I think about in my head, because it's like, you know, you've got multiple takes of things and it's like, everything has a different, nothing ever comes out perfect. It just comes out like, oh, I'm pleased with this. This is the one I think is the one, you know what I mean? And yep. That's the hard thing is like finding, as you know, like which is the one to go do the thing that I wanted to do and how to cultivate the next one or how to make the next one different than that one. You know, it's all these things that I'm sure you have a way bigger head start than I do. So it's like, here's the other thing too. You're doing a lot of the stuff yourself, correct? You're filming it yourself. You're editing yourself. So tell me, like, how do you not get lost within that? I mean, that takes an incredible amount of patience. And I have a small team, and it's like, it helps to have somebody to bounce stuff off of. When you're doing all this stuff yourself, like, how are you able to kind of, like, measure and bounce these things off of yourself when you're doing all the things?
Right. And that's a great question, too. I think that's part of the reason why I've become less active on YouTube.
Okay.
Is because you reach that point where it's like, oh, well, I did this, I did this, I did this. Next time I want to try this and do this a little bit differently. But I know how much work this took.
Yes.
Like if I want to take it to this level, I'm going to need to do this and this and this and this. Like yes. This Martin Luther King video, that one took me, I think, 3 years.
This wow.
There was one winter break, like December. And I had this idea. It's like, I really want to make this video. So I came up with the idea. I recorded all the parts. And then I was like, okay, now I'm going to need to shoot the video. And then winter break ended. I got busy. Just got back into the... And then the next December, coming up on another Martin Luther King Day, I was thinking to myself, okay, time to put this video like out there. Time to finish it. So I got my camera set up and all this stuff. Filmed all the parts. Started editing everything. Had the music. Had the videos. Ran out of time again. The following December. Wow. Like, this year, I'm putting this out no matter what. So I started the editing process all over again. By this time, I was on DaVinci Resolve instead of Premiere Pro. And I don't know how many hundreds of hours I put into this video. But I'm really happy with the final result, you know? Right. And I could have gotten some help for this kind of stuff too. And I've talked to people about joining my team or getting someone to film for me or getting someone to edit for me. And people sometimes have reached out just on my YouTube channel when they hear me talk about this stuff in some live streams. But I don't know, like, this is part of the prioritizing, right? Like, even taking the time to make these decisions for me, it's like, it's such a big deal deciding what I want to do. And part of it too is that I don't want to lose this kind of my innocent kind of naivete around, oh, I'm just doing this for fun. Because it doesn't have to just be for fun. It can be a professional thing.
Well, it's like a serious level. You're learning a skill set too. Like when you're filming, you're like looking at angles and like there. Every video I look at, I'm like, oh man, I need to be looking at every camera and seeing.
Yeah.
I'm like, okay, I'm not doing that, because you always want people to be creative, but it's like I now know, like, okay, I have a vision of what I want this to be. So it's like you're doing that already, which is like amazing and commendable. But it's also like hard, because you're the one doing all the things. So it's like, I can't imagine you're filming it and then you're editing it and then you're performing in it and then you're also being creative to put it all together. You're all the things. So I mean there's times where I'm like, I don't know how you do it, because that is a lot to take on, you know what I mean? It's
you know what it's like though. I think about your albums that you put out.
Yes.
Like the time and energy it takes to get all of that done, to get the musicians, to get the recording, to make all the parts and all the charts, like just so much stuff goes into creating an album.
Yes.
So any of the videos live that shows.
You just came and saw
live some shows too. Yep.
It was like I remember I spent 4 hours with the band rehearsing them, mm-hmm. and then I spent another 3 hours with the horns rehearsing them, and it was just like a straight 8 hours of rehearsing for me, and I was just like, yo, this, I love doing it because I love doing it. But my God, I was so tired driving home.
Yeah.
I was like, this is a lot. I'm just so, like, cause you're so invested spiritually, physically, you know, musically, it's all the things. And it's like, it's hard because, you know, there is no payoff. Like you think you're going to get, you know what I mean? It's like, it's one of those things where you're like, this is why we do the thing. But it's also like, my God, this is exhausting to do the thing. And that's why I'm like, this is part of the reason I started this show, because I think artists don't talk about this enough. I think it's important to talk about, like, yo, this is what inspires us. It's like hearing about other artists creating and being inspired by each other, but also the therapy session of, oh my God, isn't this crazy that we're all doing this? This is nuts, because it's not easy. It's always difficult. It's always a challenge, and it's not a path that is easy to do. You know what I mean? Right. So it's commendable. I want to play your Martin Luther King song right now.
All right.
Let's play. Here's Aaron Grooves with Happy Birthday.
I was going to say, feel free to stop or pause if you have any questions.
No, we're going to play it all the way through. All the way through. Here it goes.
All right.
You know it doesn't make much sense. There ought to be a law against anyone who takes offense at a day in your celebration. Cause we all know in our minds that there ought to be a time that we can set aside to show just how much we love you. And I'm sure you would agree, what could fit more perfectly than to have a world party on the day you came to be? Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday. I just never understood how a man who died for good could not have a day that would be set aside for his recognition. Because it should never be just because some cannot see. The dream as clear as he that they should make it become an illusion. And we all know everything that he stood for time will bring. For in peace our hearts will sing, thanks to Martin Luther King. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday. Why has there never been a holiday?
A holiday where we celebrate
peace, where we celebrate it all throughout the world.
Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you.
And I've looked over, and I've seen the promised land. I may not get there with you, but I want you to know tonight that we as a people will get to the promised land.
That was awesome. That was so awesome. I got chills. What a great song arrangement, and what a perfect time to play this tonight. You know, I mean, really, I got chills the whole time. First of all, I want to commend you on how hard and difficult this arrangement is, because people don't really know that you have to time this recording so that it is all lined up. Tell me what the process and the hardest part of this process was for you.
Hardest part is process. Two things. The first one is making decisions about the arrangement in that opening a cappella section.
Right.
Just trying to, because the original track has that ding ding a 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 ding. So trying to get that kind of rhythmic feel with just vocals, and trying to find some syllables and rhythms that really match that and felt right to me. And it's so funny listening to that now. I hear all the imperfections. I could do that so much better and so much cleaner. Like, I was learning that.
That's how it is. It's like.
Yeah, it is. I know it is. We do the project and we level up and we get better, and then we can do it better. But we've already done the project. So.
Yeah. I mean, somebody told me, one of my students told me this. She said, art is finished once it is abandoned.
Ooh.
You're able to just be like, okay, I'm good. And it's like, yeah, of course. I listen to my old records and I hear all the little things. I'm like, oh, I could have changed this. I could have mixed this. Could have done X, Y, Z. I could have played. I could have sang. La, 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 la. It goes on and on. But it's when you're like, it's finished. Mm-hmm. I need to move on to go to the next thing. And
exactly.
You know what I mean? So there is like this level of abandonment. And it's like, it's hard to listen to your own stuff too. It's like, you know,
because
you're like so self-critical anyways. It's like, and the things that you're hearing, 99.9% of the people are not hearing them. And the 0.01% that are, or the 0.1% that are hearing it, don't care because it's
good. Yeah, they're not going to put you down. They still appreciate everything that it took to get it out.
Yeah, so it's like, it's one of those things that's like, you just have to accept, all the blemishes is what I say. It's like, you know, and I have an engineer, he told me, he said, get it to 98%. It's never going to get to 100. And the things that you think are 100 are still at 98%. You hold them to this standard that's not real. You know what I mean? So I'm like, oh, I love that because, and the last one that he also told me was, will not affect sales. And I'm like, ooh, that's a very important one because you can like hack something to death and make it perfect and it's not going to affect the sales of it. It's not going to affect the perception of it, you know? So these are things that like artists need to relearn or hear because we're always so critical because we want it to be as good as it can be. And really it's great. You know what I mean? Like just the fact that arrangement exists, it's amazing.
Well, thank you for saying that. And also people love to hear artists being human. They don't necessarily want to hear us be perfect all the time. And they can tell when something feels like a little bit off or unreal, like fake and artificial when things are too perfect.
Yeah, I mean, even AI is imperfect.
Yeah, absolutely. Very imperfect.
That's as perfect as you can kind of get right now. It's like, the imperfections are great, you know, and it's, I wanted to ask you, so you're talking about the choices now, like tell me like when you broke down to the instruments, you know.
That's a great leading, because I was about to say, one of the hardest parts in this entire thing was filming the part that was the Dr. King, Dr. Martin Luther King, Dr. Martin Luther King, Dr., Dr., while playing that bass drum thing, that rhythm and that singing got the same. I had to practice. I had to shed that.
That one was fun.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
And then, of course, all the video editing stuff was a lot of fun. Like some of those shots, there's a couple of shots in there that took me I don't know how many hours, because I was figuring this stuff out as I went along. Some of those, right. Like, I have a vision for like having the little errands in the circles going around the one errand in the center, and then having them like pop up in time when they sing and that kind of stuff. Yeah. I had the vision, but I wasn't sure exactly how to do it. And I found a couple of different ways. Kind of
like a predecessor for Jacob Collier's stuff. Am I correct? This was before his videos.
Oh yeah, I saw a lot of his videos. Yeah, he.
Oh, so you did this after he did those videos?
I'm pretty sure this one was after he had done a lot of his stuff.
Okay. Because I was like, man, this looks like a predecessor of that. It looks like...
I know, yeah.
Because it just has this kind of like organic thing, which is so great that actually his videos don't have. They have, you know, they lack some of that, like, you know, and you have all this...
There's a lot of similarities in the style.
And it's like you parallel on these abilities to play all these instruments and like do all these voices, but your voice is better and you're arranging... cooler to me, so yeah, that's why I say I mean he's cool. I've seen him, I've met him, great guy,
yeah, he's great.
But there's, I definitely respond to what you're doing a little bit more because it seems to be a little bit deeper on a level that I think I kind of resonate with on that Stevie level, and even the message and the things that you were playing outside where the speeches are playing. I mean, that was so tasteful how you incorporated all of that. So
thanks. Yeah.
I mean, I know this was a hard video to kind of just be patient with. Did you ever want to pull your hair out and just say, I'm not going to finish this. This is ridiculous.
Well, that's pretty much what happened the first 2 years.
Yes.
Because I finished recording all the audio parts except for the bass and the keys.
Okay.
And then I was going to do the videos for those. I finished those the following year, and then I was doing the videos, and then COVID happened.
Oh, wow.
So I lost access to that recording space. So that's the reason why when the piano comes in and the bass comes in, they're in a completely different location. Those are literally in my apartment in this room with the camera right here and have everything turned around. This organ is in a different place. So that's why I recorded the keyboard on this little Nord and the bass guitar. Everything else I think I got to do in that other location. And all the lighting is consistent except for those two parts. But I was like, you know what? I think I even asked some of my, I asked a few YouTube fans, like, do you guys think I should just wait until I can get back into the same space, or should I just put this out and just finish it? They're like, just finish it. It's like, you
nobody
know what?
Cares.
Yeah, nobody's definitely overthinking this.
Yeah, people aren't going to be like, you know, this was cool, but wasn't he in a different room? No.
Yeah.
And it's like these are the things that we question, and we don't know. It's like people don't care about that. It's like the truth serum is in the arrangement. It's in the creativity of the arrangement. It's in the execution and how hard it is to execute all those parts, because that's not easy. I mean, you've got voices doubling sometimes not. You have the timing of everything, like the editing timing is one thing, but it's also, I was thinking, the recording timing, like making sure you get those delays, you know, like, you know, whatever where the timing is delayed like a cannon. That's like making sure it's tight. And I know it's like, I know that space when you're recording yourself and you're doing those things, like you're like so hyper focused. That's like the rush of creating the thing, when it's like you can kind of see the smoke clearing and you can kind of see it getting finished. But it is an extreme amount of patience that you can literally like just go down the rabbit hole and not come out for hours and hours because you're finishing it. And then there's a point where you're like, okay, so I have to ask, what was the longest amount of time you worked on it in one sitting?
Oh, I have no idea. I probably, I think, honestly, I think I put it out maybe even the day after Martin Luther King Day, because I was still trying to finish it up. So probably like the last 2 or 3 days was probably over 30 hours of work.
Wow.
Like I remember staying up. I stay up to 5 or 6 a.m. when I'm in deep into the trying to finish these videos a lot.
Yes.
And I'm sure you can relate to that as well.
Yeah. Yeah, I do that a lot with practicing, actually. Yeah. I will stay up and practice because those are my hours where it's uninterrupted. You know what I mean? It's like, like it's usually like 1 to 4. I try to 4 o'clock. I'm like, okay, I need to go to bed. Like this is because I'm going to have an early morning at some point. So, but it's interesting because I love that when artists, when they're that kind of like open about it, they're like, yeah, I worked on this for 30 hours. And it's like, okay, good. It's not a neurotic thing to do that. But also what made you stop? Was it like, I need to go to bed. I'm tired. I'm exhausted. Okay, I need to put this at bay for a little bit. What were the reasons that made you go, all right, it's good. It's good. I'll continue this later.
Yeah, for me, it's usually just you reach a point where you literally just can't keep working because you're so tired.
Right.
Like, I have to go to bed right now.
Yes.
And I don't know if you do this often, but there have been many nights where I've fallen asleep with all my clothes still on and wake up a few hours into the night like, oh, I need to brush my teeth. Like, oh, let's take off my shoes or whatever it is. Yeah, that would happen when I was finishing those videos.
I have my guitar. I used to read that Jimi Hendrix used to fall asleep with his guitar. And so, like, when I fall asleep with the guitar in my hands, I always go, that's cool because Jimmy did it. But it's also where it's like, I'm also disgusted with myself. Like, oh, my God, go to bed already. You know, so there's the two dichotomies. I wanted to ask you, let's go way back. What was the moment of Zen that made you want to be an artist or play an instrument or sing or write? Was it a song you heard? Was it an artist that you watched? What was the moment of Zen? And you grew up in, I think you grew up in Kansas City. Is that right?
Right. Yep.
So when you're in Kansas City, you're a kid. What was the thing that made you say, I want to do that?
Yeah, I don't know if there was an exact moment, but I always had music in my life from a young age in church or whatever. And my biological father played organ in the church growing up.
Wow.
So I always saw him up there every Sunday and Wednesdays and Thursdays and Saturdays, whenever we went to church way too much.
What you do when you're from Kansas City? Come on.
Right?
Some good cookouts and some food too. So it balances out.
But so we had like little keyboards and stuff around the house. I would play with those and it would just fascinate me. I could just sit there for hours playing around on the keyboard. But I really wasn't committed to music back then. Not until sixth grade. I started beginning band and concert band and was a percussionist. And within 2 months, I was just picking up the snare drum so quickly, catching up to the other guys. And it was so thrilling for me. I announced to all of my friends at lunch one day in the cafeteria, like, guys, I'm going to be a percussionist.
Wow.
And that was it. I was like, I was committed to percussion for the rest of my life. And not until later on did I discover that it's not just percussion. It's music in general. It's music in general for me. So I got into piano later on and more singing and tap dancing and ukulele and just more and more stuff, you know, and still trying to aspire to get to as high of a level as I can on all these various instruments. But I did reach a point maybe around 2021 where I finally felt like, you know what? I'm good enough at these instruments where I can start to mix them together in whatever way I want.
Right.
I finally reached that point because before then it was a lot of imposter syndrome. Like, I'm not good enough on tap dancing. I'm not good enough on piano. I'm not good enough of a singer. And I still feel that those ways a little bit. But honestly, like, I have so much confidence now. And I know that, I mean, you know, you get to a point when you're in your craft, you realize that the way you do it is the way you do it. And you can express yourself the way you want to express yourself. And it's no longer a competition. You don't have to like get better than someone or reach someone else's level. Because at that point, you're just having your own voice. And that right there is
the really big thing is getting to have a conversation musically with people. Mm-hmm. I think once you reach that point, nothing else matters. It's like, if you're able to sit in a room and it's like, no matter how great or early a musician is in the journey, are you able to have a conversation with them? It's like, if you can do that, that is everything. Because 100%. Nothing else, if you really think about it, I could sit all day and learn chops for 8 hours. I wish there's a part of me, there's the monkey on my back that is like, why don't you just stay home all day and practice? And I'm like, because I'm not going to be doing that every day. I don't want that to be the driving force of why I'm good at music, because that can drive a person crazy, and it has driven musicians crazy. But I think about it every day. I'm like, I should be practicing 8 hours a day, 6 hours a day, 4 hours a day, 2 hours a day. But it's like, I usually pick up the instrument when I'm like, oh, I want to play. I miss playing. I want to play. And then I go down that place. And even if it's 20 minutes or an hour or 3 hours, that time is like, okay, that was my moment to have with that instrument. And it's, you know, you moved to something else. But really, it's about just having conversations with other musicians and with yourself and building and writing. And like, that's all that matters. And it's like, we forget that. It's like, when you see somebody that's just so ridiculous, you immediately compare yourself. Like, oh my God, I'm not there. Oh my God, they're there. Oh my God. But they're doing the same thing. They're doing the same thing with their masters and their people that they look up to, their heroes. So I kind of feel like we have to just continue to have the conversations musically, because that's where it's at. You know what I mean?
Yeah, 100%. So, and also just this acknowledging, all of us artists need to acknowledge that what we do is so unique.
Yes.
Like, I may not play piano like Herbie Hancock or Chick Corea, or I may not sing like Whitney Houston,
right,
or I may not tap dance like Gregory Hines.
Yeah.
But all the things that I do are very unique. No one can play piano and marimba and drum set and tap dance and sing and video editing.
Absolutely.
Exactly the way that I do.
Absolutely.
And arrange things the way that I do and break things down to a level to where little children can feel comfortable improvising or speaking this musical language or composing things. Like what I do is so unique when I have my total package, you know. And what you do is so unique. Like the unique skill set that you have is so unique. And sometimes I think like when I have those thoughts that you're mentioning, like I wish I could go back to a certain period of my life and just shed 8 hours a day or have a teacher on this instrument. Or I wish I had done composition instead of percussion performance or whatever it was. Whenever I have those thoughts, I also remember like, what if I did that? What would be different? Like, what are the things that I've done that wouldn't exist in my life?
I love
if
that.
I had taken a different journey.
I need to hear you say that because I think about that all the time. Like I should have done video editing or I should have taken a film class or And it's like, I always like think of those things. But like at the end of the day, I love doing the art that I do and the way that I do it. And it's like, that's enough. You know what I mean? Yep. Speaking of your art, let's play the marimba video. What's the name of the marimba video that we have?
Is it the Mario on Marimba?
Yes. Yep. Here is Mario on Marimba by Aaron Grooves. Tell you all those spins and looks at the camera, man. I would not if you even gambled on those. Like, it's so crazy. When you do those, I was like, oh my god, my heart raced. I was like, I know there had to be, I would have had to do that 10 takes of that. Like, okay, if I'm doing the spin, okay. So how were you able to just know? Like, okay, I think this is the take. This is the one. How did you know?
I think that one was like 12 to 15 takes, but that piece was a journey. Because it's weird for me to think, but back there was a time when people were not doing video game music on marimba, like Super Nintendo music or regular Nintendo music. And now, to me, all of this stuff seems totally normal. But when I first decided to learn that Mario theme, it's because I was teaching a drumline camp in Missouri. I would always go back to Missouri every summer and teach drumline camps. And this high school drumline, they wanted to do the Mario theme. I was like, I think... I listened to it and I'm like, okay, here's the melody. Here's this bass line. There's this other third part in the middle. And then there's this percussion part. But I'm pretty sure one person could do all of that on the marimba. It might be really difficult. And I kind of like made a bet with one of the kids that it's possible. And then I started working on it, like transcribed it all by ear, like broke it down. And then a couple of years later, I'd already done a drumline feature of this with the tenors and bass drums and snares and all this stuff. It's like, okay, it's time to finally play this on marimba. And I worked on it, worked on it, worked on it, worked on it, shared it with some of those kids when I went back the following summer. And then a buddy of mine that I work with, Broncar, the one I do my Collision of Rhythm stuff with, my duo show, we made a video of this arrangement because I had just finished learning it. He beatboxed, I played marimba. And I was like, okay, I got to put my own video of this out too. So I did my own video of it and then put that one out. And then this one is the one that went viral.
So crazy. And but it's that song is so part of our fabric of our youth, you know what I mean?
Yep. Like,
and it just lends itself to sounding so good on marimba. Did you know?
It's almost like it was written for marimba.
Yes.
It lands so well. And it's challenging, but it really does lay out well on marimba. It's like the perfect range, all of that stuff.
Yeah,
I think just a few notes, a few octaves or something to make the bass line work.
Well, I mean, it's also like all the parts, sections, the timing. It makes you also kind of marvel at like, man, the composers for video games are awesome. You know what I mean? It's like, it's just so inventive and creative as the games. Like, because that song, I probably would say that song is the most famous of all video game music because everybody had that game or played the game or went to a friend's house after school. And like that song was ingrained into your youth. And it's like, it's never gone. Like I could hear it from, 10 miles away and I would know, oh, that's Super Mario Brothers. Like that's the way it is. So I love that you took that kind of approach.
And I have to give a quick shout out to all the composers of that era because they were working with just three channels of pitch, just the melody, two melody channels and a bass channel. And that was all they had. And then a random noise channel to get all their percussion. And then they had to use really clever melodies and things that would outline the chords and imply tonal harmony and all this stuff because they had such limitations. And the things that they created with such limitations is just, it's some of the best music ever written because they had such elemental elements and they had to really be strong compositions to make it work.
It's like less is more, right? Yep. Exactly. What's the really short video? Let's show the really short video real quick.
Oh, yeah. So I had the honor to make music for these animations. This YouTube animator, Alan Becker, he has over 20 million subscribers now. He's insane. Wow. And I guess he started making these videos when he was in high school. The stick figure that lives inside of his computer, he's like drawing a stick figure in Adobe Flash or something. And the stick figure comes alive inside of his computer and starts trying to attack the mouse and all of this stuff. You may have seen one of these videos.
Yes.
Okay. And then years later, he put all this stuff on YouTube and his stick figure started evolving. They made other stick figure friends. They still live inside of his computer. They have access to everything in his computer, including Minecraft. Wow. So I was his Patreon subscriber and he put out a poll saying, what should the stick figures do next? Should it be like they learn potions in Minecraft or note blocks or something else? And I sent him a message saying, hey, I'm a musician and a composer and I love Minecraft. If they decide to do note blocks and you need a composer, hit me up. And after a while, he was like, okay, let's hear some of your music. And then I made some music for him. And that music, I think that first video we did together has over 200 million views.
Wow.
Just because the music is so good. It's like the fourth or fifth top rated video on his entire YouTube channel.
Wow.
And then the follow-up that we did to this, that one's called Just Note Blocks. And then the follow-up video that we did a couple of years later, Note Block Battle, that one is in like the top 10 or top 11 of his hundreds of videos. So just having really good, clean, clear music was like, I was really proud of that. So this video is just me showing that the green stick figure in this video, it's basically me. Like the green stick figure comes out and everyone's like, oh, how does this stuff work? And he's just like, is amazing right away. So I just play his part on the marimba. It's super short, but just a little fun.
What's the name of it?
I don't even know.
That's all right. We'll
Aaron plays Green Stick Man intro.
Yeah, that's right. It's something with stick figures. Here it comes. So good. So good. It's just quick and easy, quick and short.
Quick and easy. Yep.
But it's so cool and it's iconic because it's all over YouTube, all over YouTube.
And that took me 3 or 4 hours of practice because I want to get every little thing exactly like the stick figure. No editing, no cheating, nothing. That was all live.
That's awesome. I want to show the Thriller video because I'm a huge energy fan. And this showcases all of your things.
I don't know, man. I'm a little embarrassed about it just because I do the Thriller dance in the middle. I wasn't planning to.
That's awesome.
It was just a take and I just did it. But I remembered it from like when I learned it way back years ago. And if I had just taken the moment to watch the video first, I would have picked up a couple of things that I missed.
I'm going to stop you right there. I'm going to stop you right there because I'm sure we're all going to love it. Here's
all right,
Michael Jackson Thriller. So kill it, man. Dude, how could you even be critical of that? Look at all the things you're doing in that video. And even Michael didn't do all those things. Like, I'm sorry. Like, it's crazy. So kill it. So killer. Amazing. It's really, really, really great. I loved it.
But I love it so much better now. Maybe I'll redo it. We'll see.
Well, you know what? There's always a challenge to do more MJ if your heart wants you to. You know what I mean?
You know? Absolutely. I've got plans.
MJ vibes for sure. There's definitely, you know that already, but
you got
MJ vibes for sure. What is next for you, and where can people find you if they want to find you online?
I am Aaron Grooves everywhere. Aaron Grooves on YouTube, on Instagram, and also Gmail, aarongrooves@gmail.com. Those are the main places. I have aarongrooves.com, and I'm working on getting that upgraded.
Awesome.
But hopefully within a month or two, that one will be ready.
And when did you come up with the name? I wanted to ask you, when did you come up with
it? Yeah. Honestly, I don't remember if it was my idea or someone else's idea. There were some musicians that had just moved to LA. I played drums for a show of theirs, and they introduced me. I don't remember if I was thinking about Aaron Grooves or if they recommended Aaron Grooves.
That's perfect.
I can't remember. It was so long ago.
It's so easy to remember, and it's like you're doing all the things. So like,
yeah.
Of course, you're a percussionist, you're a drummer, of course, Aaron Grooves. Yep. Perfect.
And it honestly helped me a lot because it really helped me to embrace just the groove element of music.
Right.
Because I'm the type of person, my brain is definitely more on the analytical side, and like the video game, high information side of theory of music, like that stuff is so fascinating to me.
Yeah.
It's easy for me to just kind of get lost in kind of the theory of everything. And just being able to think of groove and just sit back and just find, what are the things that are really making this pop? Like that's been transformational for the way I interact with music.
Well, my record label is called Groove Infinity Records for that reason.
Yeah, that's right. Yep.
Like groove is everything. Groove is so, I love that you have that in your name. It's in your moniker. Yeah. And
it's the most important element of music is rhythm.
Groove. Yep. Absolutely.
Groove, rhythm. Yep.
Well, Aaron, we're going to have you back on about 9 or 10 months. We want to see all the things you're creating, all the things you're doing. We've got to collaborate on some stuff. We have some things that are in the works also. And check out Aaron Grooves on YouTube, at Aaron Grooves on Instagram, on all the social media networks. On behalf of Aaron Grooves, myself and Sam, we'll see you guys next week.
Thank you so much. This has been awesome. Really appreciate it.
I was so excited to interview you. So I thank you for taking the time to be a guest on Wake Up Hollywood. We'll see you guys next week. Take care of yourselves. Take care of each other. Peace and love.
You're listening to Wake Up Hollywood with Nikki Kalula and Eddie Pence, right here on LA Talk Radio.